The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
Welcome to the Sam Sorbo Show. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm joined now by a new acquaintance, actually. He's just an average guy. And he's running for office. And as you know, on this show, I like to talk to people who are just out there living their everyday lives and then feel the call to action. So my guest is born and raised on a farm in Pennsylvania. He's a former Navy SEAL. He's a security contractor with the Department of Defense, the CIA, Blackwater. He's also a performer, guitar player, also an entertainer. He calls himself a cold beer guy, and he's running for Pennsylvania's 4th Legislative District Representative seat. Please welcome to the show, Jake Banta. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we were just about to just launch into a conversation, but I said, wait a minute, we're supposed to be recording this. You seem like just a genuinely nice guy. And I think you just reached out to me on email and said, hey, I want to come on your show. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love these chance encounters. So, so you were going to start about like how you came to realize that you needed to run for office.
Right on. I had a band for some 20 years. Let me back up. Born and raised here. Been in the military. When I got out of the military after 9/11, I was performing with my band, and that's my my passion. And I was going to get back into the service in my late 30s, and I was like, the contracting thing came about and people were saying you can go over there and, you know, contract. So I did that. And for several years, I've been doing that, like 18 years. And during the time.
So just to be clear, contracting is you're hired to perform some kind of security services, typically abroad, and it's for a limited time.
Absolutely. You self-contract out. It would be like the guys from Blackwater or SOC and these contracting security contracts. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
My close friend is John Tegan Tig from the movie and stuff. And I was on that contract actually myself. I wasn't there when that happened, but they're close friends of mine. Yeah.
Okay. So contracting, and then your day job is playing guitar in a band.
Right. No. Well, actually, it was for many years, and I still do, and I still love it. And it's connected me with the community. We have a great, small town community, and that's my passion. I love music, and I've been playing forever, and I still play every day. But very patriotic, and through the contracting, I got to go over there and see. You know, I went to Iraq and Afghanistan, and I did that for 9 or 10 years, and then or 9 years or so, and another 9 years in anti-piracy. Protecting ships and stuff like the big container ships and stuff. So
there was a movie about that too, I think.
There was, yes, Captain Phillips movie. Yeah, that probably. I'm sure that helped sell the program that this guy started, but it was really for a good cause because the anti-piracy thing went way down since we've been going over there. So,
well, that's good news. You know, before we had a Navy, there were pirates, and then we decided to. I think that's what launched the Marines initially, was the piracy that was happening overseas.
Right on. Yeah. So. But along this way with my band, promoting the band, like you probably know about in the entertainment business, you promote yourself with a band. I'm so patriotic that it just rolled into being, about political things going on, and like this whole conversation that you and everybody else is having about our country and what's going on. And a lot of the what I call unconstitutional, uncommon sense. And so I started one of the groups I started was called I Am America,
Wait, yes. You said uncommon sense. That's no, sorry. I'm going to push back against that. It's common unsense.
Okay. All right.
To
right.
be clear, it's unsensical or common nonsense.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, that's all really what I think everybody I've had a conversation with about this, what's going on. It's just they're scratching their head. Maybe, you know, every speech should be called the scratch my head speech, because everybody is just what it was unconstitutional. It was, I mean, just crazy for things to shut down that besides Walmart and the liquor stores. Right.
It boggles the mind that the small businesses would put up with that. I get it for the first 2 weeks. I get it. But unfortunately, we had so many sheep who just bought into the narrative and were willing to sacrifice their rights, sacrifice their freedom at the altar of some unknown quote unquote safety.
Yeah.
Or, right. or even more so maybe sacrifice their freedom for sort of peace of mind that the mob wouldn't come after them. Do you think?
I agree. I served again in Iraq and Afghanistan. A lot of times over there, what I really enjoy is immersion with the people, trying to learn their languages and stuff, and just hanging out with them and asking them general questions. And what I learned was you can't just deposit democracy in those places. And let's say
why not?
A quick story.
No, explain really, because you're doing us a great favor by being here and sharing some of this knowledge that you've gleaned. Why sure. can't you just deposit democracy? And I like the phrase that you use. Why can't you just deposit democracy? Why can't we just say, okay, now you're free, go and yeah. have at it?
Well, I'll tell you exactly why. In my opinion, what I really enjoyed was talking to these people over there, because I'm from Waterford, Pennsylvania, a little town, and I got to fly over there. And next thing you know, I'm in a small town somewhere in Iraq or Afghanistan. And an example would be a boy in Iraq on a motorcycle with his ball cap backwards and sunglasses on. And I said, you look awful happy. And he said, yeah. He said that when Saddam was here, I would be, beat for this. I said, for what? He said, for wearing his hat backwards and having the sunglasses on. I said, well, that's kind of, a bad deal. And he said, yeah, we're so happy you guys are here. And so that was my take from being there. Whereas back then, Blackwater and the security world were called, mercenaries and stuff. It couldn't be more false. And I'll tell you, firsthand that the several men died in Blackwater for actually saving or protecting, diplomacy or people over there, diplomats or somebody trying to help the country with their process. But to answer your question, that when you've grown up under a dictatorship, you just can't handle I don't say, you can't just give it to them, democracy. They don't understand how to live under it. They think that the way is a dictatorship. They're in fear. And it was very, not odd, but it was just strange that, like for the one of the things that I respect all religions, but the women's rights over there were just awful. And I thought, you can take off all that stuff you have, or if you want to keep it on, it's your choice and your prerogative and it's your religion. Absolutely. I want you to think that we're here, just to help your country get back on its feet. But at the end of the day, they really felt under a dictatorship that all these things that, that cover them up or keep them in that mindset, you cannot just give the freedom to them and say, we're free and enjoy, your newfound freedom. So,
It's interesting. I got a couple things to say. One, freedom isn't just liberty, because it comes with responsibility. And when you lived under a totalitarian regime, you no longer take responsibility for anything, but you're not free to do anything either. When the freedom comes back, you still don't take responsibility for anything. And perhaps you're too afraid to be free. That's one of the things that you sort of pointed out, is that and so this young man who had his baseball cap backwards, like that was a small perk, but he hadn't really understood that along with that comes a responsibility, and they go hand in hand. And so I don't think that it's just flipping a switch. I remember an older couple that I knew came into some money, and they had lived very frugally for many, many years, for their whole lives. Right. And then they came into a little bit of money. And they'd been complaining about their TV for years. It was an old CR cathode ray TV, real thick. It wasn't a flat screen, right? And they had this money. And they had enough money, plenty of money, to go and invest in a new TV, but they didn't, because that wasn't their lifestyle. They didn't money on new things. They shopped at flea markets or at garage sales or second, secondhand stores. You can't just, you know, and that's why people who win the lottery typically go bankrupt within a few years. Like they don't know how to manage that much money, because with that freedom comes responsibility.
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay. So that was a huge lesson you learned. I have to ask you, what's your, and trust me, I'm a homeschooler, right? So there's no strings attached to this question, but what's your educational background?
Just a high school graduate here in Montefiore, Pennsylvania. And when I got out of the high school, I immediately went into the Navy and went into, you know, the SEAL team. And that was my goal. Over the years, when I got out of the Navy, like I said, I had a passion for hunting the woods and music, you know. So I came home. I started a family. I have three sons, a beautiful wife. And I'm lucky. I'm a lucky guy. I'm really lucky, but I work hard for it.
Religion is who we are, where we're going, and politics is how we get there. And so if you want your life to be meaningful, then you start devoting your life to other people. That's how your life becomes meaningful, is through your relationships. And your relationships are political. They can't help but be a form of politics. So through your performances, you discovered that you were talking more and more about politics, right?
Yes. Really, what I learned in the performing, and as a former entertainer for 20 some years, I had a band around here, and I really had a good time. But the greatest part of it is meeting people. You know, when you go to a venue and you play a show, that whole thing grew into this just great relationship with people, and a window for me to meet people and talk and get their take on the world. And then I got, you know, kind of transported over to Iraq and Afghanistan and got to meet all those people. And I went to several countries in my anti-piracy work, which was like Djibouti or Oman, Pakistan, India. I got to go to those places too. And each time I was there, I would, you know, just reach out to the people. I like that. And that is how, for me, the best way I can learn from people and learn about how, their views on the world. So
it gave you a firmer appreciation for the United States, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I always preach that to people when I come home, and I hate to sound like, you know, preachy, but I come home and say, you hit the lottery here, man. It's just unbelievable. When I was in India, these people would say, I was in India when the COVID, you know, came in the early, you know, 2020. And I said, how are you guys doing? And they would say, oh, we have ivermectin. I said, okay, what's ivermectin? You know, our government is handing it out. It's real cheap. It's a parasitic drug. So certainly I went online and did my research. I found out that they really curbed completely COVID-19 with ivermectin. So soon after, I came home, and my mother's caretaker, she lives right down the road on the farm in the old farmhouse, her caretaker said, I think I got COVID from your mom. And I said, well, that's hard to say, because mom's been in the house, and we kept her in the house pretty much isolated. You know, we kept her there alone. But somebody in my family took her out or something. But anyways, I ran, you know, went down, of course, real quick. She had a little nasally thing going on. I said, you're probably okay. But I called my doctor, her doctor and my doctor, and I said, let's get her some ivermectin. So we did. So the next day I went down, and she was on the floor. She's 86 and a lifetime smoker, old school. You were just talking about
people
very
who
frugal.
Don't change. Yeah.
People don't change. They play poker, and they're very frugal about everything else. But so she – you know, it's a lifetime smoker. She's 86. She was on the floor. And I said, wow, you know, this doesn't look good. So I got her up, and I gave her one of these ivermectin pills, and I set her on a table. And I'd also read online somewhere, this is just something I read in my research, but you boil some water and the steam is good for going in your lungs. So we did this. And I said to mom, I said, just sit there, because she was really, I was really worried about her. I said, well, this may be it for her. Cause you know, all the rumors and all the stuff going on with COVID around the world.
Was this was early 2020?
Yeah.
So it was still, we still didn't know a lot. They hadn't banned ivermectin yet. It was, right. Everything was sort of still up in the air, how to deal with this.
Right. It was just on the cusp of that, where it started being, you know, a bad thing or whatever, not to use the CDC or, you know,
right.
WHO said don't use it. So, but long story short, that she ended up, you know, getting a little better. And I called the doctor. He said, just take her to the ER. So I took her in there. It had to be an Indian doctor, which is, you know, fine. I talked to the guy. Actually, they said to come back in an hour. We'll give you a call. So they tested her, checked her in. She tested positive. He said, we're going to do this and this and that for her. I said, well, I want to keep – whatever you do is fine. I just want to keep her on the ivermectin. He said, we can't do this. Oh, I'm sorry, sir. We cannot do this. And I'm like, well, I want her on that. My doctor prescribed it. I, you know, he's my doctor and her doctor. It's prescribed. I want to keep her on that. So we went round and around for half an hour. And I finally said to the guy who was in Indian descent, I said, was just in Mumbai and ivermectin is working incredibly over there. So you should know that, you know. And he said, I know this. And we, you know, we went round and round. And finally it got argumentative where I said, listen, I'm going to come get her and, you know, I'll pull her out of there. We'll have a lawsuit. I just kind of went to that level. And he said, okay, sir, we'll do it. In 4 days, I pulled her out of there and I can send you a picture of her and show you on my phone. My mom in 4 days walked out of there and said, I want a cigarette. And let's go to McDonald's. So, you know, she was cured of COVID in 4 days with ivermectin, and she's been cured ever since.
And I just want to point out, I'm not a doctor or making any medical claims, but you're saying that was early on. But so arguably that was the strongest strain of COVID that we've experienced, that by all accounts, an 86-year-old smoker should not have survived.
Absolutely. That's a point I want to make here.
All right. But we're not. Okay. That's a great story. And now you got to tie it back into why you're running, because we're going to run out of time. And I want to get to that part of the story.
Well, thank you very much. I'm running because our constitutional rights have gone out the window. I don't mind if you have a vax or you want to wear a mask or don't want to wear a mask. But the point that they're making this a mandate under the EUA is a problem because people are dying. You know, if one person dies, in my opinion, they should stop something that was used as a preventative to keep people from dying. Doesn't that make sense?
You're not allowed to make sense. That's prohibited under this new regime.
Right on. And when you say regime, it's just so frustrating. And everybody, like I said, this will be the scratch the head speech, you know, tomorrow, by the way, tomorrow at this, our local Waterford Hotel, I'm having our announcement party, and it's going to be great. And a lot of supporting people are going to be there. I'm very excited about it in our little town. But the truth of the matter is everybody is just scratching their head the same way
you
and I are.
Like,
what is going on? Well, actually, he's retiring, Kurt Soni, and he's from the fourth district legislative state representative here in Erie, and he's retiring. So I do have some competition. I don't exactly know who it is yet. It's early in the running, but something of note is the redistricting that's going on, and it's very important to note that they sent the redistricting, you know, that's going on from the census every 10 years down to. Governor Wolf, who, in my opinion, is not good for our state or not good for our country. But in the end, he vetoed that. So they're trying to work out the district lines. But so I'm not sure if that's a tactical move on the other side to actually stop people from running or getting their signatures. But I know the district that is present.
Every move on the other side is tactical. There's no.
Right.
It's all tactical. You just have to figure out what tactic it is.
Yeah, that's a good point. We don't even have it's way past due. There was a set date and it's way past due when they're supposed to have that. So I'm following along and trying to figure that out. But either way, we're running, and I'm running because it is just incredibly, it's just crazy what's going on. Everybody's scratching their head saying this is unconstitutional. This is a weird way of life. We've totally changed our way of thinking in America, and it's just an awful thing to leave our children. We can't leave our children.
So constitutional rights, what else is on your platform? What are your main foci?
Right. Excellent. I would say, you know, the economy, people around me are getting, let's say this, that you got a check for 1601. I think they sent one for 16 and another one for whatever it was, another 16. The first one, I was so mad at, you know, I told my wife, just throw it away. I don't want it. And I thought, well, it's free money from the government that we got to do something with it. So I gave it to my sons. The next one, I think, I don't know what she did with it. Probably paid something or something. I don't know. But I was just this small amount of money that's coming to you after all this lockdown. If you consider how much the tax or how much gasoline prices have gone up, you didn't get anything. You didn't get nothing. All America, with this gas tax going up the price, especially in Pennsylvania, you didn't gain anything from that check. That check didn't give you anything. We're paying at the pumps. And those are the kind of things.
But the other thing is, it was your money to begin with, and you're going to pay it back.
Right.
And you think it's free. That's the big ruse.
It's incredible. And it's just the scratch my head, speech.
You know what? One thing that you might focus on is you got $1,600. How much do you think the big corporations that are in bed with the money givers are getting? You're getting $1,600.
I'm researching
that. There's a lot of money changing hands right now. There's a lot of money that's pouring into big pharma right now.
Of course. There's so many numbers that I read on the internet. I don't know what, of course, the internet is, it's hard to distinguish what's, misinformation or not. But I can tell you, here's a fact for everybody in the United States. If you do not, it's up to you if you want to take the vaccine. But if you don't take the vaccine, you will not die from it. And right now, according to the CDC, over 20,000 people have died. I would say, let's wait. Let's wait on this and let's, I can just say from personal, I had COVID myself. I didn't take any drugs. I was on one of my shifts working on a ship. I didn't take anything. In 10 days, I lost my taste and smell and I got over it and I survived. I didn't have any drugs to take for it. My mother, of course, as we told the 86-year-old smoker, she with ivermectin in 4 days was great. So these are things that are just common sense that people aren't going listening to.
Jake, I want to thank you for coming on. Thank you for running. It is not an easy thing to run, but it's something that when you feel called to do it, you really should answer the call. It's a great adventure, and it will not yield empty results. You will see something from it. And I'm certainly hopeful that you'll win because we do need some common sense in our legislature. So I'm going to just offer to the crowd, if you will, the viewers here on YouTube. And also, if you want to go to my website and send emails, you can do that at samsorbo.com. But I'm going to ask the viewers, if you have any comments for Jake about his messaging or about his platform or any advice, or if you would like to offer your help in his campaign with either funds or your hard work in for his campaign in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a battleground state. We need to win Pennsylvania. We need to turn Pennsylvania back toward the good. And so him running in Pennsylvania is a great thing. And if anybody would like to reach out and offer support, you can leave comments in my YouTube comments or on Rumble or on Locals, wherever this is posted. I want to thank you, Jake, for coming in. This has been really interesting, and I really appreciate it. And I've lost my... Oh, there it is. Hold on. I've lost my, there it is. Technology is great. And then sometimes it's crappy. Okay. So Jake Banta, do you have a website where we can send people to?
Sure do. Jake4PA.com. And
is four spelled out F-O-R or is it a four?
I'm sorry. Yeah. F-O-R-P-A.com.
Okay. Jake4PA.com. That's great too. You can always obviously go straight to his website to offer whatever support you can. Thanks so much for coming on the Sam Sorbo Show. I'm Sam Sorbo. I'm joined now by a special guest. This is a gal who I just met, but I've known about her for a long time. And you probably have heard of her also. Chris Ann Hall is a constitutional attorney. She's also a former state prosecutor, an author, an educator. She's the host of the Chris Ann Hall Show, and she's the founder of Liberty First Society. She actually trains legislators and law enforcement and everyday patriots how to keep their oaths and defend their rights. She actually trains them on their rights as well, because as we know, our education system is not eager for people to know their rights. Why? I can't imagine why the government wouldn't want people to know their rights, Chris Ann. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. If we had a better foundation, it's sort of ironic. It's almost a negative feedback circle. But if we had a better foundation in education, we would understand automatically why government wouldn't want to teach people about their rights. And we would understand why we as a people don't want government in charge of education and training up the American future. I mean, from just simply a logical critical thinking perspective, you have to understand that government must teach that it is your provider, it is your protector, so that it becomes your master. And so education should be something that is left to the parents, left to the immediate community, and even left to the church.
Yeah. So you think I'm being obtuse when I make my joke that, oh, the government should want every. Yeah. No, you're absolutely
right.
I
know it's a joke, but here's the thing. You say it tongue in cheek. I travel all over the country. You know, I've averaged 260 classes in over 22 states for 7 years straight before all the lockdowns came. And I'll tell you, even in our conservative circles, a lot of people don't understand why government shouldn't be in the education business.
So let me ask you this, because I'm wrestling with this of late. I speak to groups of conservatives, mm-hmm. and I convince them with my three-step process why schools are not the best place for children to learn, and that our schools are basically at this point fundamentally broke. Well, they're fundamentally flawed. They're currently terribly broken also. And so we really need to completely abandon, in a sense, our school system. And raise our children, if we want them to be conservatives and if we want them to be godly, we need to take them out of that system. And the parents go along and go along, and they're totally on board. They agree with me. And then they'll come up to me after my presentation, say, we really loved what you had to say. It makes the perfect sense. We're so glad, you know, that you're saying this, more power to you. And I say, oh, that's awesome. Do you have kids? Yes. And your kids are homeschooled? And they're like, no, our son goes to public school, but it's a great school. And I'm just like, do you not see the disconnect? Like there's an entire, and I wonder if that is also a product of our education system, that we are so unwilling. Really, it just boils down to being unwilling to consider evidence and synthesize it, analyze it, synthesize it for an understanding. What do you think?
I think there's actually several issues that are involved there by design. Okay. Like I said, I teach all over the country. I hear the same thing. You know, we know the public schools are bad, but not my school. And so what that is a complete lack of understanding of, number one, the origin and intent of the public schools, and the fact that the public schools all teach the same thing. And so you might have good Christian teachers in your public school, but they're slaves to the curriculum. And if I could offer just a little bit of maybe a suggestion, is that the public school system is not broken. It's doing exactly what it was designed to do.
Yes.
The public school system was designed in the 1800s following the teachings of psychologists, experimental psychologists from the Munich School, to create laboratories of education to make the population docile, to make the population obedient, to bring about the one world government, and to create socialists, communists in through the education process. And what's interesting is they didn't begin with the kindergartners. They began with the colleges, with the PhD programs, and moved their way down, because they knew if they could take over the avenues that create the textbooks, then train up the teachers in the textbooks, and then the teachers will teach the textbooks, everything will fall into place. So it's not a matter of, oh, well, not my school. Yes, your school, every school, I don't care who your teachers are, every school was designed since the mid-1800s to bring about the society that we have today. And they even published that their purpose was to create a docile, yielding society. So the number two answer to your question is, why don't they want to change? Because they've been taught not to change. They've been taught to enjoy and to cling to comfort more than their rights.
They've been taught to cling to comfort. And in fact, this was an idea that came up the other day when I was talking about this, is people don't want to be disturbed from their comfort.
Right.
It's partly that they're unwilling to change. The people don't like change. Change is difficult, right. You know, all of that. But it's also that they're so comfortable, and they don't want to be challenged in that comfort that they're enjoying.
Well, that's why Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence that people will suffer evil as long as evil is sufferable, but after a long train of abuses and usurpations. And that's why we're starting to see a change now, because the violation of our rights and the oppressive nature of our extremely overreaching governments is finally pushing people to a place where evil is no longer sufferable. When I teach, and I've been studying this for a while now, I've been teaching now for 11 years all across the country, I have seen the methodology of the oppressive oppressors, those who are changing government into rulers instead of people ruling over government. And it's been happening a really long time. As a matter of fact, we stopped teaching the Constitution and the proper role of government in its rightful form in 1833. And so we have been on a long train. We have been traveling this road. It just didn't, from a lot of people, they think it just happened overnight. It just happened with the Obama administration.
Oh, yeah, no, it's not true. Now the sex education is off the rails, but before it was just fine. And you're like, no. Yep. Before was just the gateway to get us here.
Well, sex education was implemented in the American education system by design at the end of World War II. There was a treatise put out by the department, the General Education Board back then is what they were called.
Right.
And part of their manifesto was to teach sex education in the classroom. The other part of their manifesto was to get parents out of the education business, to get education out of the local cultural, local community business. And they said, without seemingly doing so. So we want to move parents out. We want to move the local control out in a way that the people don't even notice it's happening.
Right. And they've been very successful. And then most recently, because of COVID, parents are waking up and seeing right. that their children are being taught things that they really despise. Not that they just disagree with a little bit or that they think that maybe they can fix later, but this is real stuff that they're not going to be able to undo, basically.
Exactly. And that's where the role of the parent comes in. You know, we homeschool, and you said that you had said it opening up that part of what you teach is that the classroom is not a great learning environment. And I discovered that simply by experience homeschooling our son. We homeschooled out of necessity because we traveled so much. You know, I told you about the 260 meetings in 22 states every year, which meant we spent about 4 days a month at home. We couldn't put him in any kind of traditional classroom. And what we discovered was that the world became his classroom, and he didn't put education in a box. So no matter where he is or what he's doing, he's learning, the seeing and learning from it. I mean, we had history at the Alamo. We had science at the Johnson Space Center. You know, so learning and your children learning outside of a box, which becomes the proverbial classroom, is such a valuable experience for any human being.
And so the struggle that I've identified now is that we've all been taught, and I'm taking notes as you talk also. I wrote down education of the government, by the government, and for the government.
Oh, absolutely.
And so we've been taught by the government that education looks, smells, and feels a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think that that's what education is. And what you're saying is, well, I don't know, because we had history at the Alamo, and that was right. a pretty good education. And then we went to the Space Center, and we learned all about space. And that counts as science of education, but it's much more visceral. It's much more understandable for a child, right? When they're up close and personal.
And it's much more, it's a lot easier to vet, you know? So you're not teaching children to learn and to believe whatever is fed to them in a book. They're able to touch and feel and see, and teaching in real life is really about critical thinking. The problem with the American education system, by design, mind you, is to teach children what to think and not teach them how to think. And then secondarily beneficial to the government is to teach them that all source of wisdom and truth comes from government, whoever that agent may be, the government teacher, the government politician, the government president, the government agency, the government media. And so it's all about source information and being able to engage in critical truth finding thinking.
So I got to take a break, but before I do, I want you to give the website so that people can find you online at least once before we go to break. And then when we come back from break, I want to talk about the Supreme Court nominees and some of these mandates that we've been seeing, the lockdowns, and then finally the truckers, because I do want to get into the truckers. Okay. So before we go to break, let people know where to find you.
Well, the dozens of classes that I teach are all available online at LibertyFirstSociety.com. LibertyFirstSociety.com is where you become a member student with us. We teach middle school all the way through college. We have law school groups that use our classes to study because they know they're not getting the truth about the Constitution in law school. And you can also at LibertyFirstSociety.com get all the podcasts that we do as well.
Chris Ann Hall is here, and she teaches classes on the Constitution and on our rights and how to interpret some of our founding documents, for instance. But we've been talking about education. Now I want to branch into, because obviously we're on the very same page with education. I have nothing more to say to you about that. We have nothing else to talk about. Yep. Now I want to talk to you about Supreme Court picks.
Right. Well, the problem that we have, again, goes back to education, Sam, because I had mentioned in before the break that we stopped teaching the proper application of our Constitution in 1833. And so with Supreme Court justices for many, many decades, we've been using the wrong standard to vet them. And you'll listen because it's coming up. And I challenge everybody to listen. Listen to the hearings. Everybody's going to be and in the media, everybody's going to be talking about we need a liberal justice. We need a conservative justice. I want to suggest to the people, we don't need a conservative justice any more than we need a liberal justice, because either way, that's an activist justice. What we need is a constitutional justice. And that is a very different vetting process. So problem number one with Supreme Court justice selection over the many decades past is that we have failed to vet the justices on the only standard that's really that's really relevant, and that's the Constitution. And then the secondary problem is how we go about selecting Supreme Court justices. And this follows with the federal justices as well. It is a two-pronged nomination process. The president of the United States does not appoint Supreme Court justices, the president of the United or federal judges. The president of the United States nominates. It is a bifurcated process to be a check and balance so that the senators then vet the candidates nominated by the president on their constitutionality, on the whether they're going to be independent from political influence or if they're going to exhibit what our Constitution calls bad behavior and be an activist judge. So when we talk about Supreme Court justice appointments, what we really need to understand is that the Senate is the appointing body of Supreme Court justices and federal judges, not the president. And to have senators that are willing to rubber stamp a presidential nomination simply in the name of tradition is a failure of that check and balance system, which has given us justices like Sotomayor, like Roberts, like Kagan, like even Ginsburg.
In fact, you'd say it's a failure of it's an abdication of their duties.
Absolutely.
If they're just willing to rubber stamp now. But I'm going to push back because I don't know that a conservative justice is necessarily an activist justice. And I think that that is because I'm extremely partisan. I think that that is a labeling of the left in order to say you think we're bad. The other side just as bad. And that's why, for instance, they've redefined fascism as if it's right wing. And it's not. Of course, it's left wing. It's just another left wing ideology, along with communism, socialism, and Marxism. But they've labeled fascism, they call it right wing, so that they can say, well, the guys on the right, the far right, are just as bad as we are. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if when I think of a conservative justice, I don't think of somebody who rules in the vein of conservatism all the time. I think of somebody who goes back to founding documents. And
well, that would be a better definition of a constitutional justice.
Agreed, but I would also say that's a conservative justice, right?
Right, but even our conservative justices trade constitutional issues quite often. Justice Thomas has held against the right of the people in the Fourth Amendment quite often. Justice Scalia voted to expand governmental power through executive agencies, through the EPA. And so what we have to understand is that a conservative justice, although not as akin and not as often votes contrary to the Constitution, that conservative issues like power for security, power for safety, power for police, power for in protection of governmental agencies are considered conservative issues. And the justices will then set aside the Constitution in its application to limited government. And that's why I like Neil Gorsuch so much, because Neil Gorsuch is willing to even challenge those principles that have been established as precedent that conservative justices generally lean to and say, no, 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 we need to put the right of the people to be secure in their property against the Patriot Act, right? We got the Patriot Act from conservative justices and the fair indefinite enough detentions and stuff like that. So
fair enough. And I would say that Scalia was roundly considered our one, or not one, but our main constitutionalist. And yet you're saying he still found a little bit too far simply for the conservative viewpoint rather than the constitutional viewpoint.
Yes. And it's those precedents that are established that when we wiggle away from the standard of the Constitution, because the Constitution is really not complicated. Application of the Constitution is not complicated. But when we allow the justices to interpret new meanings into them to justify this action or justify that action for whatever reason, then we start down a road of precedent that actually creates problems.
It's
one
very
of the
dangerous
things that I had mentioned with Scalia had to do with the EPA. His majority opinion said that the EPA has the authority to define carbon credits and has the authority to define certain meanings of words. And through that, the EPA has expanded their power. I don't believe Justice Scalia intended for the EPA to do that, but it's those deviations from the standard that create problems.
Yeah. Unfortunately, when you start messing with the rules and sort of realigning the rules, the whole game goes askew.
That's exactly right.
It's interesting. I mean, of course, I was a big fan of Scalia. I was not aware of that. I don't make a habit of studying up on all of the rulings that have, although I will say we studied the Dred Scott decision and I would encourage people to go and just read Taney's argument in the Dred Scott decision because it is phenomenally flawed.
It's activism in its prime. And what it has done, unfortunately, is fueled the whole CRT argument that the Constitution labeled men as property. And I have to go back and I have to teach people it wasn't the Constitution that labeled men as property. It was a Supreme Court justice who said he had the authority to redefine the meanings in the Constitution that said the Constitution defined men as property. And so, again, it's those things. And I'll say I love Scalia. He was a fabulous conservative justice. But we have to be, you know, it's that critical thinking thing, Sam. We have to be in the habit of really being critical thinkers, even when it comes to people that we like.
And I agree. We also have to engage in thought, which is hard. And we've been taught in our schools that thinking is hard and not to bother because we will tell you what to think. And so we're all stuck. Not all of us, but you know, there's sort of a barrier to entry. There's that inertia that we have to overcome to go there and to really think it through. And by the way, Scalia made some really fine decisions also.
Absolutely.
Everybody makes mistakes. Nobody's perfect and all of that. Including the Supreme Court, not perfect. And I just hold up Dred Scott as my, you know, prime example. And I don't even have to go to the abortion ruling, but we can start with Dred Scott and go from there.
You know, Sam, that's a really important realization to verbalize. As you just put it, that the Supreme Court is not perfect. And this is one of the reasons why we need to stop elevating the Supreme Court to
Agreed.
A position of authority that doesn't constitutionally exist.
They also
Supreme
don't
Court
make law.
Does not make law.
There you
Roe
go.
V. Wade is not
that.
The law of the land. It's a Supreme Court opinion.
That's right.
And so what we're really talking about here, Sam, is as a people, we need to make the choice to look at original documents, to look at the Constitution itself, and to really be willing to be made uncomfortable to teach ourselves to think a little bit deeper.
Yeah, that's very well said, making ourselves uncomfortable. I just realized there's a weird correlation because the Supreme Court issues opinions. Mm-hmm. They're not even judgments. They're opinions, right?
Right.
And they're also called rulings.
They're actually not. If you look at the documents, they are called opinions. We call them rulings erroneously.
Okay. Fascinating, because you're no longer entitled to your opinions if they disagree with whatever status quo, whatever I hold, right? And that's because opinions are laws.
Right.
Like, we've conflated these words and confounded ourselves. And so Absolutely. Now you're not allowed to hold your own opinions because right. they're dangerous somehow.
That's a really great connection. I love those little connections of how the psychology of the mind works and how words dictate how we live. You know, words have meaning, and the way we think actually dictates how we behave.
Absolutely.
And that's what, you know, what the experimental psychologists that created the school systems actually know.
That's right. And our words are our thoughts. So once they control the words, which is what that's what my book is about, Words for Warriors.
Yeah.
Once they control the words, you won't be even allowed to think the things that you want to think. And of course, the reason that we have the First Amendment is not so that you can say things, it's so that you can think things. I mean,
exactly.
also so that you can say things. Why I'm sad that people are so ignorant of these things, Chris Ann, but what you are doing is so fantastic. And I really encourage people, by the way, isn't she great to listen to? So go to, I wrote it down here. Where is it? LibertyFirstSociety.com, LibertyFirstSociety.com, to get her classes, to listen to her, to find out where she's speaking near you so you can go see her in person. She's a very dynamic speaker. They do a great presentation, you'll be blessed by it because these are important things that you need to know. And just because your government told you that they were boring and uninteresting and not important means that they're exactly the opposite of all those things. And so you should definitely engage Chris Ann Hall. Go to LibertyFirstSociety.com.
I've got three stories that I want to talk to you about, all of them violence that's happening inside the schools. And these are amazing stories, shocking, in fact. This first one's off the Blaze. It says, shocking video shows violent bullying incident between middle school girls. And I'd love to show you the video. I don't think I can because it is really, really terrible. So there's a middle school girl, apparently, who is quite large, and there is a very diminutive, petite, small middle school girl. And the first girl is bullying the second girl. The video starts out, and someone else is videotaping this. Okay? So it starts out, she's like holding the girl by her hair and saying, you don't like that, do you? You don't like that. Do you like that? You don't like that. And obviously there's something that happened prior to this, but the large girl is at least a foot taller than the smaller girl. And she's got at least 100 pounds on her, if not more. You don't like it when people do that to you, right? You wouldn't like it, right? So don't do it again. And I don't know what the girl did. If anything, I don't know. She shoves the smaller girl, and I don't know their ages. And of course, faces are blurred out or whatever. She shoves her, punches her, and knocks her to the ground. And as the girl is falling to the ground, I think she fell once and got back up and then she knocked her to the ground again. She hits her head on a wooden bench. And the thud that you hear is quite loud. And then at that point, the girl stayed down and the other girl kicked her a couple times. And the larger girl said, I will hurt you, while this small thing is lying on the ground. I think she even had her backpack on her at the time. I will stomp your bitch ass face in. And then she says, you can go now. Bye. And the little girl gets up and runs out of the room. I'm just saying, this is in Ladies Island Middle School in Beaufort, South Carolina. There's no particular state or right. This is rampant. This is all over. This is within our school system where we are teaching young people that they are accidents of nature and that survival of the fittest is the law of the land. That's all this is. It's survival of the fittest. And if you're small, you're going to have a bad day at school. I reported on Schools Out with Sam Sorbo, a story about a young boy. I think he was 6 years old and he was bullied. And the older kids or bigger kids punched him and he hit his head on the way down and he was unconscious. And some other kids walked past him. Lots of people walked past. They kicked him. And then eventually they got him up and they sent him home. And then he killed himself the next day or 3 days later. His mother took him to the hospital, I think, because he wasn't feeling well. And then the hospital sent him home. I'm getting the stories confused a little bit. But regardless, the reason that I put it on the show was because this little boy took his own life at the age of either 6 or 8. And the videotape is chilling. I mean, kids just walking past this young boy. Now, I get it. Some of those kids did probably go and tell authorities at the school. But nobody sat with him. Nobody tried to see if they could rouse him. There's no care. There's no humanity. There's no concern for your fellow man. This is quite chilling. And we're seeing, obviously, we're seeing sort of the results of that in our culture today, where we are considering individuals as inhuman because of either their political stance or their, you know, financial status or whatever. But more and more their political stance, because let's face it, COVID is a political thing. And so if you disagree with the way that I believe, then you're not human. You don't even have a right. Look at what's happening up in Canada right now. You don't have a right to have a job. You have to earn that by performing the way that the government tells you to perform. Dance, monkey, dance. I'm just saying. The parents of the bully girl are supposed to be being held accountable. They're asking for something to happen, that the school board at least looks into the situation. The school looks into the situation. A police spokesman confirmed the attacker would be petitioned in family court. She was charged with third degree assault and battery, as well as making threats. Now there's a second video of a female high school student brutally beating a female classmate with more than 30 punches to the head. So this is high school now, and the other students in the classroom are laughing and filming. So there is the film of it, and it's a brutal film. Again, I'm not going to show it, but it starts out with, and I don't understand the circumstances. Of course, this is all taken out of whatever context, but the young woman sitting at her desk, and there's a camera right on her, like close up. It's kind of interesting. So it shows, you know, sort of from the desk up, basically. And the attacker comes over and just starts pummeling her in the head. And eventually, fairly quickly, I guess she landed a blow that knocked the girl out. So the head landed on the table, on the desk, and stayed there. And then this girl just pummeled her. And there was another girl, I think it was a girl, who got up and like put her hand out and was like, hey, that's enough. Hey, cut it out. Stop it. To no effect. And then she stopped trying to stop the attacker. And so it was 30 punches to the head. And the images are just brutal. So she pummeled her with her left fist. Then she switched to her right fist, just continued pounding the victim's head as the audible thuds are heard on the video, presumably from the impact of her skull banging against the desk surface. After approximately 36 punches to the victim's head and one weak attempt at stopping the assault, the attacker walked away and the victim just remained motionless. Well, she was knocked out early on. We don't know what the upshot is. Clark County School District, that's Las Vegas, where I used to live. And the police were called to break up a fight. But a video showing the incident later was posted to social media. And the paper said, they added that the female student shown instigating the fight was cited for battery. Alrighty then. So now she's going to have a record. That's awesome. They may add further charges. That's not the point. The point is that this is happening. The point is that this is happening. Nobody went to the student's defense. Well, nobody went effectively to the student's defense. One person stood up and tried to get it to stop. No one joined her in trying to get it to stop. And people filmed it and laughed. And I'm just saying, there's something wrong with that. That's not proper. That's not right. All right. Lastly, this one, Legacy High School secretary beaten and choked by a student. And then they covered up the fight and they covered up the other attacks that are happening inside the school. And this is also strangely in Vegas. So this is on the heels of that last brutal beating. Now the media is covering it because they haven't been covering it in the past. And now there's some teachers who are finally coming out to talk about the violent conditions inside the Clark County School District schools, which run throughout the Las Vegas Valley. So they covered yet another attack that had been covered up. And these people came forward. So a 17-year-old female student attacked the principal's secretary, punching her multiple times in the head and trying to choke her unconscious. So there is no respect for authority. Not that I'm saying that it's always warranted, but you're talking about young people who have no respect for authority. And where are they learning this? So when people say to me, well, Sam, okay, fine, you know, education's broken, but what about socialization? We want our kids to be social. And I say, then please don't send them to public school because they will not learn proper social behavior there. And this is just more evidence. And there's somebody here tweeting, couldn't imagine sending my kids to one of these hellhole schools. The attack popped up on social media last night. Save your kids, pull them out of public school. That's tweeted by Network in Vegas. I support it. But again, don't focus on the wrong thing here. Understand this is systemic. It's not just because somehow Clark County School District is bad. They all teach the same stuff now, guys. So the kids are getting this from somewhere, and it's not any particular school. It's the system. And that's why I say, save your children and take them out of public school. We'll take them out of school. But if you want more information about that, go watch Schools Out on Epic TV, Schools Out with Sam Sorbo, and learn how you were failed by the education system. I like to say it's a show about education, what you don't know, what you should know, and what to do about it. And so tune into Epic TV. You got to subscribe, but you can do that. It's a great platform. So support the good work that they're doing and subscribe. And please watch my show. And thank you for tuning in to the Sam Sorbo Show. I'm Sam Sorbo. We'll see you next time.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.